From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in a quaint little hotel, some would even call it historic, in the Hudson Valley, 2014. The Union Street Guest House in the town of Hudson wanted customers to feel at home, but they also wanted customers to feel compelled never to post a negative review. How? Well, the hotel posted an official policy stating that guests would be charged $500 for posting a bad online review. And once guests started finding out, you can imagine they were not happy. News of the policy snowballed, and within weeks, many reviewers decided to post harsh reviews as a way to penalize the hotel for trying to bully customers. That's when the owner of the hotel came out and said, "We were just kidding." He claimed it was meant as a joke, but he also acknowledged it had become an official policy. And one customer claimed the hotel had tried to come after him for that $500. That hotel is not the only business that has tried to penalize customers for bad reviews. And that's why a couple of states have either tried to pass, or I think we're going to find out this hour, have passed so-called right to Yelp laws. Congress is considering one. This hour, we're going to talk about the law and the etiquette of online reviews and their impacts. Let me welcome my guests for the hour. Scott Maloof is an attorney who specializes in the use of social media and electronic information. And Scott was on the program recently, and the very tail end of the hour, we mentioned right to Yelp laws. And here we are. We're going to devote the hour to it. Scott, nice to have you back here.
Thanks, Evan.
Chris Lindstrom's here, a local food blogger and experienced Yelp user with how many total Yelp reviews now in your career?
Jeez, it's been a while, about 220 or so, yeah.
Okay, very good. And Danielle Ramos here, the owner of the Rochester Brainery. And Danielle, do you know how many times you've been reviewed on Yelp?
I think we've been reviewed somewhere between like 14, 17 times.
20.
Oh, is it 20? Okay, great. I haven't looked in a little while. I guess I should have looked before coming on the program today, so I knew exactly.
Well, I do my homework. We're going to be talking about Yelp reviews for the Brainery later this hour.
Okay, great.
You don't have too much to worry about, but there are some, to me, there are some interesting points that I'd be curious to get Danielle's take as a business owner. So we got a lot of angles here, but where I want to start is this. You might be wondering, how would a hotel actually try to find customers? And my understanding, Scott Maloof, is that the $500 fines were essentially going to be withheld from a party's security deposit. Because in this case, the owner of the hotel had a wedding party comes in. And he explains, we don't usually do wedding parties. We're going to let the wedding party come in, gets a security deposit, and then wants to withhold a $500 deposit for a negative review. The first question a lot of people had is, legally, can you do that?
Well, Evan, I think the answer is it's going to depend on every situation. I mean, in this situation, for the hotel, it's going to be really hard because judges are inclined to read those kinds of contracts very narrowly. And they had a really big problem because not only did they say, if you, the couple who presumably is contracted with us, post a negative review, we'll charge you $500. But if your guests or attendees or anyone staying here posts a negative review. And that kind of gets really beyond the pale of what you and I would agree our relationship with a hotel should be.
Okay. And if something like this ever went to court, and my guess is, and we'll talk about this in a second, one of the reasons we are seeing efforts to create either state or federal laws is to address this very question, which 10, 20 years ago didn't exist at all. But if something like this ever did go to court, Slate.com covered this guest house hotel story, and their analysis was it would probably be struck down in court under a doctrine of contract law known as unconscionability. Scott Maloof, unconscionability?
Here's what I would do. I mean, yeah, you're going to look at a number of screens for this. First, you know, let's not even look at the contract. Let's just look at the government and how they regulate businesses and their affairs. The FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, has intervened in cases like this. There was a company called Roca who sold supplements, and as part of the sale of the supplement, they said, you will not do negative reviews. And the FTC said, this violates federal law. It's unconscionable, and it's an unfair business practice. In 2003, then Attorney General Elliot Spitzer had a similar issue with the company that's now McAfee, who said, you know, same thing. When you put the disc in, it said, you agree you're not going to review us. And under state unfair competition laws, that was struck down. So that's the number one thing, is the government's going to do that. Secondly, as I said, you're going to see judges who will narrowly read the laws that these contracts are seeking to invoke. So defamation, they're going to say, is this really a defamatory review? My soup was cold. You know, that's probably not going to be high enough. You're already laughing about that because I'm sure you see those kind of reviews. And then two, you know, one of the other flavors of this is the copyright being assigned, and judges will read that very narrowly. And then three, let's go to the actual contract itself. Yeah, some of the doctrines that a judge would apply is one, this is unconscionable. It's a form contract. You've signed it. You had no chance to negotiate that. I'm going to strike that. Also, it's against public policy. We believe, you know, the judge may say, we believe it's really important for the public to comment on their experience, and experiences get better because of it. I'll strike that. And finally, ethics. You've seen doctors. We've seen cases of doctors and dentists who have used a form contract to say, if you review me, I will own the copyright of the review. And that has been struck down. One of the reasons, basically, the ethics community and the medical profession have said this is unethical. So that is the long list of things you'll do. And then the statutes come in, because those are really complicated legal questions. The statutes come in and short circuit that and say, if they get passed, on their face, these kinds of contracts are not enforceable. So instead of a judge analyzing the facts, the judge looks at the statute and says, yes, this kind of contract falls under the statute. These clauses are gone.
Okay, so it sounds like, broadly speaking, that since the advent of online reviews, we have seen in various places and cases a business owner, whether it's in the food industry or hospitality, hotel, or medical field, try to limit negative reviews in various forms, and most of the time, that's not working out for them.
Right, exactly. And apartment complexes have been another one. There's an apartment complex in Florida who had a, quote, social media addendum, which tried to grab the copyright ownership of social media and reviews. So all varieties of business have looked at this.
I mean, here's another. Jennifer Palmer, a woman from Oregon, testified that her husband had bought Christmas gifts from an online retailer called Clear Gear.
Sure.
After the gifts never arrived and the company didn't respond to their complaints, Palmer left a critical review of the company on ripoffreport.com. And more than 3 years later, Clear Gear contacted her claiming she was in violation of a non-disparagement clause in the company's terms of use and that she owed $3,500 unless she took the review down. Didn't work out for them. She ended up winning, but she ends up having to hire an attorney for this, Scott. So these cases are happening, and where do we know we are with right to Yelp laws, state, federal?
Okay. Currently on the state side, California has a right to Yelp law. It's the first one in the country. Maryland, I believe, is on the cusp of possibly passing their own version. And then the federal side, no federal statute yet, but the Senate has passed a version, and there is a bill pending in the House, and they have similar protections for these right to Yelp issues.
Now, some may say, well, everything Scott Maloof is saying indicates that you don't need these laws because judges are going to strike these cases down anyway. Mm-hmm. Do we need these laws?
Very simply, it's because, you know, as I walked through, you heard there are so many issues and it's so complicated. When you have this kind of law, the whole goal is to say on its face, this contract is unenforceable. And so it makes it very easy for a judge to look at the statute and look at the contract and say, is this clause one of the types that's unenforceable? Secondly, remember, it also changes the analysis because it gives power to either the Department of Justice, the FTC, to fine businesses that use it. So it goes from a situation like ClearGear, where the company says, you owe us $3,500, to, you know, an enforcement official, or if there's a private right of action, an individual saying, every day you use this, there will be a fine. I believe one of the bills in the, might be the Senate version, was $16,000 a day as a fine for every day you had a contract out there. So it's no joke.
All right. So listeners, if you have any questions or comments on the legal side of things, Scott's our man, and we've got more to work through as we go throughout the hour. And you can call the program as well, 844-295-TALK. It's toll free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI. If you're in Rochester, 263-9994. We're not just talking about the legal side. I think wrapped up in all of this is the question of online etiquette. And what I want to do now is turn to both a business owner and someone with plenty of experience as a Yelp reviewer, because sometimes they're at loggerheads. But we'll see here. And I want to read the explanation from the owner of the Union Street Guest House and see what a business owner thinks and what a reviewer thinks. Here is what Chris Wagoner, owner of the Union Street Guest House, said about that $500 fine for customers who posted a bad review. Quote, quite frankly, I'm embarrassed. This indeed was a policy of the Union Street Guest House. It was originally intended as a joke and never something I told employees to enforce. However, since it was listed on our website, it did represent an official policy. I now realize this joke was made in poor taste and not at all funny. This is no longer a policy of the Union Street Guest House, and we have taken it off our website. I've also read the reviews from guests saying we tried to enforce the negative reviews policy on them, and for that I apologize. That's from. So in other words, it wasn't a joke, but now I've got to save face. Daniel Ramo, as a business owner yourself, can you ever imagine trying to enforce a no reviews policy for the Brainery?
No. In fact, I definitely encourage anything like that. You know, I think from my perspective as a business owner and then also as someone who works with small businesses on their social media, it's only a way for us to improve and grow. And then it's great to, you know, when you hear that positive feedback to see what you're doing right as well. I think it offers a really great platform to be able to respond and to receive, you know, feedback. And while sometimes you might receive negative comments that, you know, you maybe wish the person emailed you directly to kind of, you know, clear up, you know, that is not always the case. But in my opinion, you know, I think it's a really great customer service opportunity.
We have heard, and I will read, some emails from business owners who've contacted me saying that they have found occasionally some very frustrating reviews that they think are harmful. Not that they agree with financially penalizing, mm-hmm. but it can be tough. But to Danielle's point on the Brainery, there's 20 Yelp reviews. Mm-hmm. Only one is not 4 or 5 stars. It's 3 stars. I don't know if you read it. It was from a couple of years ago. It was actually quite thoughtful.
Oh, the meditation?
The complaint was about essentially the space, and a little bit about the size. And it mm-hmm. turns out now the Brainery is getting a new home anyway.
Yeah.
But did that kind of review, you were familiar with it? Did that make an impact on you?
Yeah. And that's actually, you know, it's one review out of the 20 that we have on Yelp. But something that we hear more often, people that, you know, email us with feedback from the class. We have an email that goes out to people after a class, after a certain amount of time, if we haven't heard from them, to get their feedback. That's something that's been provided to us in that kind of email platform, feedback platform as well. So, you know, that is a reason why we are going into a larger space and offering some of these amenities that, you know, we have received feedback about.
Okay. Well, Chris, as someone who has posted many Yelp reviews yourself, first of all, your take on this particular hotel, trying to find someone $500 for a negative review.
So first is a caveat. I haven't been an active Yelp user in probably 2 years now, but I've spent a lot of time on there, and I still go visit from time to time to read what people are saying. I mean, my opinion, just directly, it just seems like extraneous litigation for something that really should have been as easy as communicating with your guests better. I mean, it reminds me of the patent troll situation in a lot of ways, where there's just this extra litigation that just didn't need to happen. The fact that people have to fight a lawsuit or fight a contract for no reason just kind of frustrated me in general, when they could have just communicated better and maybe not made that joke in the first place.
Joke. You're giving him a lot of credit, assuming it's a joke.
All quotes intended.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
What would you have done if you were on the receiving end of that kind of a threat?
I mean, for me, I definitely fight back. There's no reason not to. Obviously, with the precedents that Scott had mentioned, I mean, there's no reason not to. The problem is, you know, there's monetary issues for you, too. You have to pay money to fight this now, and now you're in the wrong, you know. Even if you're right, you end up being penalized for being right. So I think that's all kind of frustrating, and why, although I really do like, you know, I love the fact that people can say what they want on Yelp, I think that's an important factor for it. You know, you really need to keep an eye on what you're saying and why, because I see the business's point of view as well, and I actually have some examples we can talk about later with some local businesses that I've talked to that have some, you know, negative experiences with Yelp. So I can see the business standpoint as well. I'm sure you do.
It can be frustrating. And did you ever hear, when you were more active on Yelp, posting more than 200 reviews, did you hear from business owners who said, I think you're unfair here?
You know, I didn't get anything directly. My usual intention wasn't to write negatively. I only wrote negatively when it was obviously something bad. I did write one scathing review of a restaurant, one of the Rochester establishments, Rochester Classic establishments. And I thought it was pretty justified. They didn't write back to me directly, but you could tell that they had either told people to write about my review, or they were writing under a different name about the review I wrote, trying to negate what I had put out there. But since I'd written a lot, my reviews tend to be higher up and people would see it. So it certainly wasn't a positive by any means.
And picking up on what Chris said, that's a real frustration for business owners and others with Yelp, which is that weighting system of a consistent reviewer, a power Yelp reviewer gets a higher, you know, weight and gets more prominence on the site. Because I think for business people, they say, well, wait a minute, isn't it more valuable to have 200 people and they post reviews and they their experience as opposed to his 200 reviews outweighing them? And I think that's a lot of what motivates this kind of issue, as well as, you know, makes business owners say, I have to play Yelp's game. I'm not in business to do that. I'm in business to serve my customers.
Yeah, I think people tend to be very annoyed with the algorithm. It's, you know, the mystical algorithm that sorts people in and out, where they show up, where they don't show up. Are they filtered out? I know a lot of businesses are really frustrated with that when they see positive reviews that are filtered out and negatives that are left on the front page. And they interpret that as we have to pay for advertising to put positive reviews out there.
Yeah, and listeners, you might remember, I think about 18 months ago, we had a conversation on this program about the question of whether Yelp is shaking down businesses for that. And Yelp says they are not. But our focus this hour is on the so-called right to Yelp laws that have been proposed in a couple of state levels and the federal level. I think that's all relevant here. And in fact, Mike and Canada is first up on the phones, weighing in on the power that Yelp can give people. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, I don't think it's only Yelp. I think it's social media in general is kind of the anti-Orwellian in that little brother is watching and big brother needs to be transparent.
Could you say again, Mike? Big little brother is watching?
Orwellian was big brother is watching you. Well,
right.
And now with the social media and you know, the police and the government and everybody else, little brother is watching, and it's forcing transparency in the world.
So,
and little brother should be able to complain about service, and if the business is transparent, then they will address the complaint, and if they don't address the complaint, then things like Yelp will assure that the complainant gets heard.
Mike, thanks for the phone call. Let me start with Danielle, a business owner. Scott's really a business owner, too. I mean, attorneys can get reviewed, right, Scott?
That's true. There have been a number of issues on that.
Five stars.
What do you make of Mike's comments, Danielle?
I definitely think that, with any social media platform really out there, whether it's Google, Facebook, anything like that, even just a tweet, you know, anyone can give their opinion. And a lot of people are watching that kind of thing. I think it kind of goes back to me to the customer service aspect of it. And that, you know, businesses that talk to their customers, that interact with their customers, are transparent about their business practices and why things maybe are the way that they are, people will listen and I think are ultimately reasonable if you're willing to have a conversation with them. In my opinion, for Yelp, they do have something where you can kind of flag a review if you think that it's not an accurate review. And they will, from my understanding, they have that. Facebook also has something like that. I've had to go through that process on Twitter, but I'm sure that if you were to contact them with any concerns, you know, if someone is writing something that's completely inaccurate and you can back it up, I'm sure they would not be unwilling to talk to you about it at least.
Well, Scott, on that very question, Peter writes to us on Twitter and says, are there legal protections for businesses versus those who lie in reviews, as hard as that may be to prove?
And I would say, you know, it's very, very difficult to be the plaintiff and sue somebody for a review. You know, I kind of went through the hurdles that a business owner faces, and there are quite a few. I mean, the first one being, is the reviewer anonymous? If the reviewer is anonymous, you know, the question then quickly becomes, how do you unmask that? And there's a whole set of standards to apply for that that we've seen a lot of courts are kind of defaulting to. Unless you got a really good claim for defamation, you know, we're not going to unmask the reviewer. And second, there's a slight chance that some of these big companies may intervene. Twitter intervened in an individual lawsuit in the Western District of Washington, I believe. So all of a sudden, you know, Evan and I are busy suing Chris for his review, and then Twitter shows up or Yelp shows up and says, I have an interest. So now we've got to take on Yelp. It's not really something you want to be doing. So I'd say, are there rights? Absolutely. But going through all of those processes can be very expensive and time consuming. And it may be better, as Danielle said, as Chris has said, to engage really early on and use all those other tools and then use a lawsuit if you have to as a very, very last resort.
Do you agree with Mike from Canadice on the little brother's power of forcing transparency?
I think that's great in theory. I would say it can often not work in practice. For example, I'm sure Danielle would say, I'm not going to discuss an individual matter, you know, how much someone paid or the particular things if they had something really go wrong. I'm not going to discuss that on the review. I'll discuss our policies and our practices, and then we take the rest, the individualized stuff, offline. And you can have a lot of business transactions, attorneys, accountants, doctors, where their ethics rules and law prevent them from discussing individual things. I mean, I'm sure if you had an operation that went wrong, mm-hmm. you clearly don't want that being discussed in social media.
Okay. Chris, what do you make of Mike's comments on empowering? And I ask you this from an interesting context because you're not really doing a lot of Yelp reviews now. Why?
Correct. I moved on from what Yelp was offering me. You know, I want to do my own thing. You know, I write for the city paper. I do my own website, do my own podcast.
You can mention the website and the podcast.
Foodabouttown.com or Foodabouttown on iTunes.
Okay. And but that's why you left Yelp, not because you thought Yelp had changed in a way that you didn't like.
I mean, it has changed. I mean, the more something gets popular, the more, I don't want to say watered down it gets, but the level of discourse on Yelp right now isn't what it could be. You know, I think that's... To the caller's point, it's good in a way that everybody gets a voice. It's great. Also, if the level of discourse isn't good, that's where you get into more issues when people are writing, you know, vitriolic comments and they're, you know, exclaiming things and maybe exaggerating the truth and maybe they're not fully informed. That's where you get into problems and it's where you get into more of these witch hunts instead of constructive conversations.
Okay. How can we get back to that point that you feel like it's as constructive as maybe it used to be?
Well, you know, I saw recently, I looked on the talk threads on Yelp, and I saw somebody had posted that recent DNC article had, I don't want to say, you know, defamed because that's a legal term, but, you know, they were basically saying negative things about Yelp and the community in general. And this person who I've read her views a long time, I respect her opinions, she wrote what people need to do is to take the time to write conscientious, thoughtful, thought-out reviews. The more effort you put in, the better the product everybody else gets to see. If all you're doing is yelling and screaming, you're really not adding to the conversation. You're not making Yelp look good by being there.
And that's true on just about anything that has an online review. If you go to Amazon and you see a one-star review of a book, for example, this book, whatever, one line, versus a long review that gives you insight into why they didn't like it. Isn't that more valuable too? It goes for just about anything online.
Absolutely. You can completely disagree with a long, well-written review, but you see why they're saying it. A great literary example, I was on, I think, Goodreads or something. I was reading reviews of Confederacy of Dunces, a book that I love. And I read reviews, and there were people that completely hated it from top to bottom. But they justified why they hated it. I disagreed with them, but I could see their points. And if you can justify why you're writing something, I think you can have a real conversation instead of just bashing somebody because it feels good at the moment.
But I think that points to an inherent flaw in Yelp and all of these systems where they use stars, you know, because you have everything reduced to so many stars. You see this in so many websites where people will take that and they'll say, we're 4.5 stars, we're rated 10 out of 10. And that's a real problem. I mean, I had this in my own matter where I was working with a downstate attorney talking about a case, and I knew everything on the social media aspect, and he knew everything on particularly this downstate issue. We had the exact same reviews on a lawyer review site, and I think any customer coming there would have taken the wrong thing. Had they hired him for social media, they would have been toast. And so that's, I think, the inherent problem with the star system, and yet the companies have to use it because it's baked into their business model.
Have you not seen the reviews for a book called Summer in a Glass? I mean, on Amazon, they're fabulous. But there's one-star review. There's one. Someone said, I was expecting a New York wine guide. What was this? And the author wanted to say, it was never meant to be that. How are you giving me one star? It's like going to Star Wars and wanting Gone with the Wind, you know?
There wasn't enough horses.
I know. I don't think J.J. Abrams wanted horses in that. And that's got to be frustrating. I mean, again, it shouldn't be illegal. And hopefully, the egalitarian nature of this kind of thing, the democratization of review, will allow the marketplace to decide what's quality review and what's not. But here's a different kind of question. Alex in Geneva wrote this morning and said, Evan, can you address this? Is it legal for businesses to reward customers for good online reviews. Makes me wonder if half the reviews I read are just straw men. Alex in Geneva. Reward, I assume, Scott Maloof, meaning we'll take, we'll lower the price on the next meal you have for that kind of thing. Is that legal?
Bunch of interesting issues that brings up. I would say one, we've actually seen some cases. Again, the FTC has gotten a lot of traction by finding companies who had influencers, people who had fashion blogs and fashion Instagram accounts promoting things. I think it was Lord & Taylor who had a dress that instantly sold out, and they didn't disclose we have given these people an incentive. So right there, that's a big problem. You've got to disclose so it's a fair business practice. The second thing, it can be a big violation of the terms of service for sites like Yelp. I know Yelp says do not compensate people for reviews. That's why you have that kind of weird language, check us out on Yelp. You're not supposed to encourage people. The third thing is, ironically, Evan, there's actually a New York State ethics opinion on this issue for lawyers. And lawyers can give clients a discount if they, in exchange for review. We can't compel them to make it a favorable review, and we have to fully disclose that we gave that discount. So, oddly, your restaurant theoretically can't do it, but your lawyer can.
I don't feel very good about that.
Yeah, it's understandable kind of on that theoretical 50,000 foot level. But, as a practicing attorney, I would hate to be in that situation of trying to give some value to say, give me this review. Especially, I feel like it kind of makes that a really challenging relationship. Is the person, how are they seeing my service? And the same thing, any service you get, you shouldn't be driven by the review, and it should be straight up, how's the service?
All right, well, look, I mentioned earlier the Rochester Brainery, of which Daniel Ramo is the owner. 19 out of 20 reviews are 4 or 5 stars. And, did you find yourself wanting to reach out and say, come on, free class next time? Does that ever occur to a business owner when you see those great reviews?
No, because I don't want to encourage. I want to hear people's honest comments about the business. I would hope that whether they're talking to someone in person or they're talking about the business in person or talking about the business online, that those comments are honest and truthful. And I don't want to, encourage someone one way or another. We do offer a check-in deal, which a lot of businesses do, which is, incentive for checking in when you get to the business, but not saying, hey, write us, a review and we'll give you a free class, because people are probably more inclined to write something positive because they think that, oh, maybe I won't get this if it's something negative.
And my complaint, as someone who might read online reviews to help me decide about a product or a service, is that if I don't know that there has been kind of a quid pro quo, then I'm suffering as a reader, as someone who's relying on those reviews, right?
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't you feel the same?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I actually do use Yelp and sites like that a lot when I travel, because you want to get a good opinion. If you don't know someone in that city, it's a great place to go and see, what place you should go to. And I want to know that those reviews are honest reviews and that I'm not going to show up somewhere and say, wait a minute, this doesn't seem right. This doesn't match.
Sure. And Chris, how much did you encounter any kind of positive feedback, those kind of scenarios?
Not a ton. I mean, it's really when you identify yourself, not as a Yelper, but as a conscientious consumer. If you walk up to the owner and say, hey, I really enjoyed this meal, well, you can have a real relationship with them afterward. I didn't get much online from the positive reviews. It was pretty limited, really.
Scott Maloof, is it unethical for someone to walk into a restaurant and say, I'm a Yelp reviewer, give me X, Y, and Z, or is it potentially illegal to try to leverage, I'm a reviewer, I expect free food, a discount on the meal, something different?
Well, according to South Park, absolutely. Everybody's seen that. So.
It was a great episode.
It really was.
I want to ask Chris what he thinks. Okay, but go ahead. Yes.
One of the characters looked a little like Chris. I just don't want to say that. Oh. But in truth, I would say, from an ethics standpoint, ethics is individual, but definitely it feels like a little bit of a stressor in the sense of
a shakedown.
Also, think about your fellow diners, in the sense that we're all there. Think of you go to a fancy restaurant and people, some someone brings a baby who's crying and you think, well, you weren't very considerate of me. Is this very considerate for your fellow diners to say, I deserve preferential treatment, I get the better table, et cetera? And from a legal standpoint, you know, for the individual, right off the top of my head, I don't see a particular problem, but I definitely would see a problem for the business, especially if that became sort of known and now there was a quid pro quo. Again, as you said, I expect these reviews to be fair, and if the business is undermining that process, you know, the state attorney general might have something to say about it.
Chris?
Yeah, I mean, I really want to focus on the fact that the more you spend effort, the more you really, you do a good job at what you do, you don't look like the guys on South Park. You don't come across as a pompous person. You don't come across as somebody demanding something they don't really deserve. Mm-hmm. If you take yourself with a, you know, a little bit of humor and say, hey, I'm writing about food. This is fun. And I like to highlight great things in our city. You know, that's something Yelp's great at in a lot of ways. I still use it to find obscure places in Rochester that a lot of people don't know about. The more people use it, the more you get to some of these places. You know, these small, I went to a Turkish restaurant recently. That's not publicized anywhere other than on Yelp right now. So there's a lot of advantages to it in that way. But, you know, it's not taking yourself so seriously and thinking you're important. You're just one voice in a crowd. You can be heard, but you're not that important. Just take it for what it is.
Well, we referenced the South Park episode. And for our listeners who didn't see it, they savaged Yelp and Yelp reviewers.
That was fantastic.
And you liked that.
Oh, I loved it.
It was fair.
I've been a South Park fan since the beginning. So anytime that it hits closer to home, you think about it a little bit, but you take it in good humor and say, hey, I don't think I'm that person. And personally, I don't. Obviously, I'm a compensated reviewer for the city newspaper. I take the time to try and be conscientious, but you take it with a grain of salt and you say, hey, I know people like that. Or am I doing any of these things? Do I need to change what I'm doing? Because Matt and Trey are smarter than me.
All right, I'm late for a break. I've got more of your questions coming in, and we'll get to those on the second half here as we continue our discussion of so-called right to Yelp laws with our panel coming from three different angles in our community. Scott Maloof, an attorney who specializes in the use of social media and electronic information. You can find him online, Scott Maloof, MALOUF.com. Daniel Ramos, the owner of the Rochester Brainery. And Chris Lindstrom's a food blogger, a food writer for the city newspaper, and a retired Yelper. Not a retired Yelper. It's a former, more avid Yelper.
Long furlough.
All right. Short break. More of your questions next. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on The Next Connections, we welcome Karen Gaffney first hour. She has Down syndrome. You might have seen one of her TED Talks. And she is spreading a message of inclusion, including a warning against prenatal testing that can sometimes lead to selective abortion. Then, in our second hour, Soy Unica, Soy Latina, an event aimed at young Latina girls building confidence and career skills. Talk with you Thursday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. California has the nation's first right to Yelp law, essentially saying that if you're a business, you cannot financially penalize, or you really can't penalize in just about any way, someone for a bad online review that you don't like. And yes, that kind of scenario has played out in a number of places across the country. So California's got a law, Maryland's considering a law, and there is a federal bill that still tied up in committee, as most bills are, but it could pass, and it would be a you would assume it would supersede state law. A federal right to Yelp law, Scott Maloof, would be sort of the federal answer for what companies can do regarding negative reviews, right?
I mean, without putting on my law professor hat, the vast majority of the times you'd presume it would apply, yeah.
All right, so here's let me read Jake's comments or questions for Scott. The ridiculousness of businesses banning negative comments seems bound up in the same crazy sell your soul clauses in social media terms of service agreements. Is there any hope for legislation that would more generally address both of those issues? In other words, would either of the federal right to Yelp laws also cover other abuses of terms of service agreements?
I think the short answer is no. The statutes we've seen on the federal side are basically designed this way. They look at what are the three abuses that have been most common. And those are, one, outright bans on reviews; 2, a financial penalty for some type of review, especially a negative review, and 3, assignment of the copyright. So you did some kind of review, I, the business, now own the copyright. That's pretty much all those bills are looking to address. And then they have several carve-outs, for example, for employees. So if an employee were to go on to Yelp and reveal all the business secrets, that would be still something that the employer would probably be able to fire them for. So terms of service of social media, no, not likely to be covered. And secondly, I think the federal bill actually exempts those and specifically said we've carved them out. So no.
Okay. Steven on Twitter says, I would never conduct business with a company that he's saying essentially, I would never conduct business with a company that penalizes customers for negative reviews. He says, also, this is not just about Yelp. There are other ways to provide reviews. Of course. Yeah. Of course. Though Yelp has really grown. What do you use, Daniel? I mean, you say you use Yelp, for example, when you're traveling. Are you posting reviews? Are you using anything else?
Yeah, on occasion I do, post reviews. Mostly I try and post positive reviews. I think I've only posted one negative review.
Are you an Amazon user, Goodreads, and anything else?
Yeah, not really. Although there is apparently someone else that has the same name as me that posts on Goodreads. But that is not from me. That's not my review.
That's our first defense.
I know, which is so funny. Yeah, but no, I mean, I will, rate businesses on Facebook, mostly Facebook or Yelp, really.
And Twitter, I think, can be really good.
You
see a lot of, like, Delta Airlines, I believe, has a designated Twitter account that you can tweet at them if you have a problem. So that's a good example, too.
Well, and my guess is when you advise companies on use of social media, there's a difference between someone like you, you're a business owner, but it's in your DNA to engage online.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, we're not going back anyway. But let's say you're 55 and you're not used to the sort of the free-flowing social media world where one negative comment on Twitter can go viral.
Right.
And or Yelp or other sites, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And there may be something that's a little bit more challenging for a business owner who is not used to that and is frustrated maybe by that sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I got an email from a woman named Tiffany, didn't want the last name or the restaurant mentioned, but essentially emailed to say, you're talking a lot about the positive aspects of Yelp, but for me, I can tell you that it really hurts when there is a negative review because it tends to stick. A lot of people see it, especially hurts if it is inaccurate, and I don't feel like I've got a lot of recourse. So Tiffany's saying it can really hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you advise companies to do to respond?
Sure. Well, first of all, I think that people are going to talk about you whether it's online or offline, no matter what. So at least online gives you a chance to respond. So even if you're not actively using all of your social media accounts, it's great to it's great to be able to at least monitor it every so often so you can kind of get a good grasp on how people are talking about you. I would say that you can respond directly to those people on social media, whether it's thank you for your review or we appreciate and value your opinion. We'd love to talk to you about this further, see how we can correct the issue, or just, say in general, we'd love to talk to you about this further. Would you mind sending us an email? Could you send us your email address so we can reach out to you directly? So I think that a lot of times, I've seen this happen with a lot of clothing companies and things like that, on their social media pages. And a lot of those companies use their Facebook, Instagram for customer service issues. Like Scott was saying, there are some companies that have a dedicated customer service Twitter account that's separate from any other promotional stuff. So I do think those are good tools. I know that not everyone is using them necessarily to promote their businesses, but to monitor what people are saying, I think it's a good thing to do.
And I think that another point to take away is you want to have multiple channels where you're out there. Take the business owner. If Yelp or Twitter is not driving business to them, it may not be as important as, say, word of mouth. And so you want to have all of those tools available and say, where am I really getting a lot of business? Let's really empower that channel.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Lindstrom, before I... Wow. I'm trying to read on the flyer. I got an email from a listener who directed me to the story of a Denver chef who has become a Yelp vigilante. You've heard of this?
Well, yeah, I don't recall the details. So.
I, In a minute, I'm going to read some of the way he responds, which is pretty much the opposite of what Danielle Ramo urges. But before we even get there, you've also mentioned that you have heard from local business owners who feel sort of similar to Tiffany, who emailed the program to say it can hurt. It can
really stick. I mean, they've got a couple different directions where Yelp has been negative. And before I do that, I do want to give the balanced view. There's plenty of businesses in Rochester where Yelp's been great to them. Mm-hmm. Businesses like, I mean, just a couple examples, like Atlas Eats, like Vula's mm-hmm. Greek Suites. Like the Brainery, been done very well by Yelp and have no complaints. I have a couple, and one who's he was willing to put his name out there on this, Brian Van Etten. He's been on your show before.
Yep.
The head chef at the Playhouse, a Swillburger. He's had a pretty significant amount of negative reviews as an early business. You know, in the early days of the business, issues with consistency, with quality. And a lot of them he's been very straightforward on. He's responded with transparency and said, hey, yeah, we're working on this. Responded directly on Yelp, on social media, and given them direct feedback. And others that are a little more nonsensical, he's used his social media to, you know, poke fun a little bit and say, hey, this is a ridiculous comment. Mm-hmm. You should view it the same way I do. Not to fight back aggressively necessarily, but, you know, on his Instagram where they have a following, just say, hey, okay, yeah, we don't have parking. Well, obviously we don't have parking. We're in the middle of the city. We don't have a parking lot. I'm not moving to the suburbs. This is where we are. And, you know, Brian's, you know, he's not a nameless, faceless business. He's a person running a business. And, you know, it's a young business, and he's trying to respond as truthfully as he can to everybody.
And some ridiculous comments deserve ridiculous responses. But
absolutely.
But some legitimate complaints, I think, my guess is he probably disarms some people by saying, hey, I'm the owner, mm-hmm. and I want you to know I'm listening, and we're going to address this, and we're going to make it better. That probably really helps him and the customer.
Absolutely. And I know he's done that for a fact. He's posted about issues he was having as a growing business. And he said, hey, we know it's not right yet. We're fixing it. Mm-hmm. And it's not just to the one person. It's to everybody. So he's highlighting the issue and saying, yeah, we're transparent.
Sure. Smart, isn't it?
And I've seen a lot of his posts, and every time I read them, I'm always very impressed because he addresses every single issue right, you know, head on. And he's very transparent. I think people appreciate that, you know, about businesses. So, you know, sometimes it is appropriate to respond in that kind of way. And I think, you know, what Brian's doing is appropriate.
All right, I've got some phone calls to get. Rachel writes to us on Twitter and says, no one should write anything they would not say directly to a person. Everyone feels powerful behind their screen. Fair?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a lot easier. It's harder to be the person who will respond to the questions. And as a reviewer, I try to do that. I try to be a named faced person. And if you want to complain to me after I write something, you can talk mm-hmm. to me directly.
Yeah. Rachel follows up to say, I've had more success addressing issues directly with the business. Give them the opportunity to correct the problem first. Then review. And I think that's a very human response to the issue. This is Robert in Fairport next up. Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, I don't know if I've heard this anybody talk about this, but I learned about a year ago that there's actually a business where people freelance write and get paid for submitting reviews to sites like Yelp and whatnot. I'd never heard of such a thing before, but apparently it's within the food industry, it's a known kind of thing. The other thing is that the way the Yelp system works, I don't use Yelp, I use TripAdvisor, it seems to be gameable at both ends of the spectrum there. It looks like Yelp may be able to kind of squeeze restaurants to persuade them to, kind of pay up in some ways, and the fact that the way the reviews are filtered also seems to play into things.
Robert, thanks for the phone call. Stromy, any response there?
There's always a way to game a system. I mean, if you pay people to write a lot of reviews, they'll be ranked decently because they write a lot. And yeah, sure, you can do it. You can see, if you read enough of them, you can see which ones are pretty obviously written by the business or somebody paid to do so.
Sure.
It's usually pretty apparent.
It's all legal, I guess, Scott. I mean, it's part
no,
of
it. Actually, we've no? seen, again, we I believe a couple of years ago, the Attorney General cracked down on one of those review mills and said, you know, again, this is an unfair business practice because it was not transparent and it was hurtful. Again, it all depends on how it's organized and who does it. So we've seen that. So I would say, bottom line, the bigger issue is take these reviews with a grain, you know, with a grain of salt and say, you know, just because somebody gave something a one star, we saw that in the South Park episode where everything was brilliant and then the parking was terrible, one star.
Right. And,
well, let me go ahead and address this that one of our listeners sent about the the Yelp Vigilante, a Denver chef. Here's a story from Grub Street Online. If your answer to Yelp's ongoing problems involves increasing the number of verbal slap fights, then Denver has a hero in waiting for you. His name is Mark Neary, N-E-R-Y. He's been running a breakfast spot in Denver called Onefold. And he does not like negative reviews. And so there was a Yelper in question named Michael Yu, who maybe overwrote things a tad. Here's part of that the negative review. Michael wrote, quote, I can't read that part. The almond croissant had a sopping wet layer with an oily orange halo. And Neary didn't like that review of his croissant, for example, among some other things. So here's what he wrote back, because you can reply, right?
You can, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Here's his response. Hey, Mike, quote, hey, Mike, you can review our restaurant, but I can't review your writing. You do write with a prose that reminds me of a high school valedictorian that tries way too hard to sound intelligent. However, that's my opinion, just like your opinion of our croissant. To be fair, I would like to review your visit as well. I won't make it as long and as boring as yours, though. Creepy guy walks in, creeps out workers and customers, asks for Wi-Fi password, ducked behind computer. Other customer walking up complained that you may be watching porn. Then he goes on to say that you were watching porn in a restaurant, and I'm not even going to read the rest. And so, interestingly enough, Scott Maloof, this chef who is kind of like taking these reviews very seriously and writing back very negatively, he's getting a lot of flack from other customers who are even saying, hey, I like your place, but you're overboard here. Mm-hmm. And I would actually be worried about defamation if you're making porn allegations and things like that. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, that's a real challenge. My take would be you got to be really careful because you're dealing with dynamite. Not just that, but also privacy. I mean, you have no idea, you know, who's coming in and what kind of situations are going on. Or heaven forfend, somebody's skipping work, and somehow, you know, your response brings it to prominence, and the person loses their job. But that said, we have seen that there have been businesses who say, you know what, we've got one star on Yelp, and we're proud of it because we reject Yelp entirely. And again, I think that points to another flaw in the Yelp business model, and that's my opinion, which is getting between the business and its customers. You know, it's one thing to have a review. It's another thing, you know, the algorithm and the weighting of the reviews that business people feel like you're forcing me to play this game your way. And so as a business person, you really have to say, okay, to what extent will I play this game? How do I directly, and Danielle would probably say this, get connected to those people via phone numbers, via emails, and not let Yelp or other businesses like that intermediate.
That's one thing, but it's another to do it this Denver chef's way. There's no way you would advise that. I can never in a million
Definitely
years
not.
Imagine you writing back to a customer like that.
No, I mean, it's one thing to discuss the experience, but to attack someone's character online without knowing them. I mean, whether you're doing that to someone who's, you know, come into your business or just doing that to another person without actually knowing them, you know, it's a little unfair. You know, I definitely, if he doesn't agree with that person's experience, again, you know, you can say, you know, you can still talk to them about it without doing it in a, you can do it in a constructive way, let's say. And I would hope that people would be leaving constructive reviews, even if they have a bad experience, and that business owners should be responding constructively as well, having a conversation instead of just being negative.
Mr. Lindstrom, what do you think?
Although it was pretty hilarious, I don't think it's probably the more, like Danielle's saying, the most constructive way of dealing with it. I mean, I hope he writes more. I'd love to read them. But, you know, is he building his business? Probably not.
No, I certainly wouldn't think so. And Scott mentioned, by the way, businesses we've seen, I think, San Francisco, a restaurant, yeah, trumpeting the one-star review. Mm-hmm. As a way not of saying we get one-star reviews, but of saying we don't like the game of Yelp.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that is very different, though, mm-hmm. than directly attacking a Yelp reviewer. So as we get ready to kind of close the hour, right, some closing thoughts here. So, Scott, what do you expect? Do you have any expectation for where we go next with Right to Yelp laws and where the legal system's going with this?
One, I think we're going to see more of these laws. I think it kind of goes very much to what people believe. I've got an opinion. I should be able to share it. Two, the challenging issue I think we're going to see is as social media goes more image-based, video-based, it's going to be a lot harder to figure out what exactly review is. So, for example, emojis. You know, you can now use emojis on LinkedIn. And so if we're saying, okay, you got to review my business, you got to interact positively, what do all these emojis mean when I review something? So I think we're going to see more confusion before we get through it.
I know you're keeping it 100, Scott. Don't worry about it.
Just give me the smiley emoji.
There are some I don't get at all. But Scott, it does sound like businesses that think they can police customer reviews are probably going to lose.
Yeah, it's probably going to be a very long legal fight, and I would say this should be a very, very last resort in the general circumstance.
Okay. Danielle, what do you think is the future of online reviews? I mean, the democratization of reviews. I've talked to professional reviewers in the wine community. There's something called Seller Tracker, very, very popular. Obviously, those are amateurs. People aren't paid. But it has become very, very popular. And that's just one small example. I'm sure that's true for gardening. I'm sure that's true for just about any genre. Where are we going next with this? Is this going to be an ebb and flow, or online reviews going to stay powerful?
I personally feel that online reviews are only going to become, you know, more powerful. They're not going away, you know. There's probably no way that in a year or two, every option to review someone online is going away. So I think that business owners in particular kind of need to embrace it to a certain extent and say, okay, this is happening, whether we like it as a business or not, but what can we do to interact with our customers to, you know, make positive changes for a business, or, you know, just make this a positive experience, you know, for our customers. It's a great way in terms of feedback, I think, for businesses.
I do hope whatever happens, there's more transparency on all sides. And we mm-hmm. touched on it. I hope there's transparency so I know if there is a quid pro quo. So someone isn't posting a positive review because that's my best friend's book, or
right.
they gave me a discount at this restaurant, et cetera. Chris, where are we going next?
Daniel's right. The online reviews aren't going away. And all I hope is that if you're going on to look at reviews for something, if you're going to try and find a restaurant, try and find reviewers that you believe in, mm-hmm. that you mm-hmm. understand their point of view. There is a barrier of entry for you as a user of the service as well. If you read blindly and just take everybody's review at the same value, you're losing a lot of what's there. If you find quality reviewers on Yelp, you can get a lot of value out of it. If you come read me, you know my point of view. If you read Tracy over the DNC, you know what she has to say, or Amanda. Mm-hmm. So you know what they're saying. So find the reviewers you like, take their opinions with a little more value, and don't just look at the crowd.
Mm-hmm. I think that's well said. And now everyone's got a chance to kind of make their voice heard, but that's where the free market of ideas and reviewing comes in.
Sure.
So establishing credibility. Good stuff. You can read his stuff, Mr. Lindstrom's stuff, in City Newspaper and online where?
Foodabouttown.com or Foodabouttown on iTunes.
Very good. Thanks for being here. Scott Maloof, scottmaloof.com, MALOUF. Great to talk to you again, and thanks for updating us on all the legal angles.
Well, thanks for having me.
Great to have you. And Danielle Ramo, we will talk to you in a couple of months when you get to, I know our listeners have been asking about the Brainery, so you'll have a new home. Do you know when?
June 1st, knock on wood. If construction goes according to plan.
and more offerings? Is it going to grow?
Yeah, we'll have 3 rooms. There'll be larger rooms. There'll be windows. We'll have natural sunlight. It's very exciting.
You've been reading your Yelp reviews, which are almost universally positive. But we'll talk to you in a couple months about that then. Congratulations.
Sounds good.
Thanks for listening. Mariel Brinkerhoff did a great job for us today. And Val LaBanca, always a great job as our engineer, Megan Mack producer. I'm Evan Dawson, and we will talk to you Thursday.